Hello and welcome to Get in the Bin, episode 10 via the Everything is Black and White podcast. I'm Andrew Musgrove, joined as usual by...
Me, Sam Mulliner. Hello.
His usual chirpy self. Not in a lovely tropical number this week, but a very plain, but still fetching Newcastle United training top. Another one that you got in the sales, Sam?
Yes, I need to be stopped.
I had a lot of people saying that the training top you were wearing last week was not tropical. I will maintain it had elements of a tropical nature in it. But yes, I get the point that maybe it wasn't a Caribbean-esque outfit.
Yeah, it's not quite like the Joe Linton shirts that were going around last season, was it? It's not quite that tropical, but no. Why didn't you introduce yourself as Hero of the Year? I thought that was a joke you made last week, but then I after doing some digging on the said awards that were, you know, I'm going to say we, but it's, let's face it, it's yous, that were up for. It's genuinely Hero of the Year. What have you done to be nominated for that? Have you saved any children from burning buildings?
Okay, well, I haven't done that, you know, and if anyone listening has done that, you are the true hero. No, this is just...
Have you failed to stop an impending terrorist threat?
No, I've not done that either. What I have done, though, is given you a platform to get your witty remarks out to the public, which is a hero-esque thing in itself. Look, it's just someone who puts in a lot of effort into a podcast up against some big names of the podcast world. It's just a little bit of a recognition for hard work. But you know, if I were to win it, and I haven't won that for the last 3 years. Each year I've been nominated. It's still a team effort. It's still a team game. And it's not about me. It's about the team behind Everything is Black and White podcast. And but thank you for bringing it up and trying.
Aren't you the team? I thought you were the team. I thought this was like a solo gig. So who's this mythical team that...
Well, there's you and there's Aaron and there's Lee and there's Gibbo as well, the guests who appear on the show. But yes, behind the scenes.
At least you're mentioning Aaron this week. That's a nice change of pace.
Did I not mention him last week?
No, but purposefully left him out.
Oh, I do apologise.
Have we got any update on whether or not I'm coming to the awards due?
I haven't got any update on whether I'm going to the awards do. So that's the main priority. And then
we can't not have the Northeast Hero of the Year, who, as we now officially has saved an old lady from being run over by a bus, is now the Hero of the Year. They can't not have him go to accept his award.
If I win, which I probably won't. Yes, hopefully I'll be there. And, you know, because you've been so nice at the beginning of this episode, it really makes me want to fight your case and take you down to London as well. We'll see what happens, Sam.
I'm not getting my hopes up whatsoever. I can't even get a ticket in a ballot for a Newcastle game. How am I going to get to an awards gig?
Are you still going on about that? Goodness me.
Yes, and the day of recording, it's the last day. It's the last result day of the ballot of the season. So I can't wait to not get a ticket for Brian at home today.
Will that genuinely be no tickets through the ballot?
Yes.
That is I can see why that would be very frustrating for you and your young lad and why it did actually end up getting in the bin. This week, though, episode 10, goodness me, we are getting the numbers in. And it definitely is episode 10. I had someone question that in the comments last week. It's definitely episode 10. It's the scores that we're a little bit unsure of. But yes, episode 10. And I've got an item, Sam, that really, really winds me up. But it might be better applied to another series that we might do in the not-too-distant future where we kind of say, you know, the 10 ways to change the game for the better. And I suppose you can apply that kind of theory to this series. But my item this week is additional time in its current format. Now, it's not the sexiest item to bring to the table. I understand that, and some might have already fallen into a deep sleep. But I get frustrated when you see the board go up at the end of the game. And I get frustrated because there's a proper lack of consistency, and that really isn't good. I want to know every single second, why is that being added on? Why has that not been added on? There needs to be clarity. There needs to be transparency to make sure that additional time is fair and consistent. I'm not a man who pushes conspiracy theories, but I can understand why some fans believe other sides get more time than other teams. And I get that. I don't subscribe to it, but I understand the frustration. And I think if the Premier League, the FA, FIFA, UEFA, whoever has to get on board, can just be a little bit more consistent and transparent behind the minutes that get added on, it would make it a lot better. And you might not be happy with it, but at least the reasons have been put there in front of you. There should be consistency and you can accept it. And look, if your side concede in the ninth minute, that's not down to the linesman or the fourth official, but at least you know why those minutes have been added on.
Yeah, I considered this one myself as well, because I wouldn't say I'm a fan of it per se. I think it's going to take a bit of getting used to, and it has done this season, because you do get ridiculous amounts of like stoppage time, even like the first half. It was against West Ham the other week. We had like 10 minutes of stoppage time, and then they obviously scored in the 45th plus 10, because of course you can't call it the 55th minute because that's in the second half. Yes, I get that it's frustrating, but I think the only way to kind of appease everyone and to solve this once and for all, and it's an awful method, is to really take the rugby approach and you stop the clock when the ref says so or when the ball goes out of play, and you don't have any stoppage time. You stop the clock. So when a team is managing the game, as the top clubs call it, or as when the bottom clubs are doing it, time wasting, you just start, the clock is stopped, so it makes no difference whatsoever how long the time is being taken to take a kick or to take a throw in or to do whatever, however you want to manage the game or time waste, depending on the club that's doing it. You have to go about it that way. There's a couple of things in rugby that I like that the referees do. But not all of it would fit into football.
It would be very stop-start, that, wouldn't it? But I get the point you're making, and it would probably eradicate the time waste. And I am a big fan of the theory of when the... I like how rugby ends, you know, when the ball's kicked into touch. That's the end of it, isn't it? At the end of a game, you don't kind of run over. And the mic'd up refs, I think that's a big thing as well. There's so much respect towards officials in rugby in comparison to the so-called beautiful game, isn't there?
Yeah, and I like that. The stop-start nature of it, I don't think it would affect it, because you can still let the game flow, but the only thing that's stopping and starting is the clock. You don't have to blow a whistle and say, wait and take the throw in whilst I just hit the stopwatch. No, you can still let the game flow. The only thing that would be stop-start would be the clock itself. You don't want a stop-start nature in it, which is why I just cannot stand, and I've tried to get into it in the past, but I've admitted defeat and I just can't do it anymore, which is NFL. Absolutely detest it. That's too stop-start. What you're saying is where the referee has to announce the decision to the crowd, to the stadium, whatever. That's good. They trialled it, didn't they, in the Women's World Cup? And I don't think it went badly. There were still poor decisions, but, you know, at least you got to hear the explanation for it. Yeah, I don't mind that, but I don't think it's a big deal, really, about the... I think we'll get used to it. I think we'll get used to the added time.
I don't have an issue with the now prolonged added time. That's not my issue. I'm all for that, because I think if you are time wasting, if you are trying to manage the game, then that rightly should be added on. But my issue is there doesn't seem to be a consistency with it. Every week we're seeing different numbers, and obviously that's down to the incidents on the pitch. But for the same things that are happening, you know, we're seeing quite a difference in times. And I think my issue with it is that lack of consistency. And what I would like to see at the end of every game, and this is going to sound so boring to some, and you might laugh at us, but I'd love to see like a statement released at the end of every game documenting each item to where those seconds have come from, just so we know exactly what the linesman, what the referee, what the fourth official are looking at to get to that 7 or 8, 9 minutes. And you're pulling the face there, but I think it's really important, because, you know, if a team concedes in the ninth minute and they're adamant there should have only been 5 or 6 minutes added on, then at least, you know, it would help the criticism of the officials. You go, well, wait there. Here's exactly why there were 9 minutes added on and not the six that you're proposing. It was because you did that, they did that, there was this sub, there was that celebration, the ball went out here for XYZ, we had this injury. And that would, I think, improve the consistency. And it would just, I think it would actually result in better respect, more respect for the officials, which, like, as we've said, just isn't there at the moment.
So it's the transparency argument. Is your point, because at the end of the day, it's not going to change anything. It's not going to change the result. It's not going to change anything by what, like, if a team does concede, like, similar to what, remember Anfield last year when we conceded late on, which was just absolutely gutting because we did not deserve to lose that game one bit.
But that's
not going to change anything. Still would have lost.
Yeah, no, and I accept that. But the amounts of times I've heard people bring that game up in reference to added time in other games not being as much, I think actually helps my point win this week, because I've heard it so many times. Oh, we're there. You know, we got these amount of minutes for doing that at Anfield and we lost. But, you know, he's done it twice, thrice, four times in this game and there's only been 5 or 6 minutes added on. And I think it is the lack of consistency. It is a lack of transparency. And as I've said a couple of times already, you might not like the fact you've got 9 or 10 minutes added on, but I do think if it's written down there in front of you and it's consistent week to week, game to game, you will come to accept it and understand it. You might not like it, but at least you know why you're playing an extra 10 minutes and not 6 or 7 minutes.
So you actually like the additional minutes, you just want an explanation why. So have you been hoisted by your own petard already?
No. My argument was always consistency and transparency. I do not mind for a single bit.
Was it? I never heard you once say the word transparency until I said it a minute ago.
Nah, I think you need to go back, mate. Yeah, people in the comments will pick you up on that. I definitely said the word transparency very near the start.
They it pick you up on clear. A lot.
It needs to be transparent. Yeah, you know, teams deserve to be punished if they're going to muck about in the regulated 90 minutes. If you're going to take an eternity over a goal,
they're not mucking about, they're managing the game.
Well, okay, managing the game. If you're going to,
if it's a greedy six club, if it's not, then they are of course time wasting, which is absolutely disgusting,
awful. But I do think you deserve to be punished if you're managing the game, time wasting. You know, you've got to take the penalty with that, and that is added time. But I just wanted to be a bit more clear and transparent to the fans so we understand exactly where that time is coming from. Sam, your item this week?
Scapegoats.
Scapegoats. Oh, hello. I guess you're going to name a couple of people straight off the bat, yeah? Are we talking to Sean Longstaff and a Dan Byrne?
So, yeah, maybe. What I want to make the distinction about, first up, because you've gone straight to the Byrne and Longstaff point, I have no issue, like when you do your Monday show with Aaron, or when we do things on Newcastle Fans TV, or, you know, fans just expressing themselves on the socials or whatever like that. I have no issue with criticising a player's performance if it's been bad. No problem. Like, you know, the most recent example, I suppose, would have been Dummett when he came on at Everton, giving away the penalty, which was silly. What I don't get is people blaming the same players every week, even though when they've not actually been that bad, and overreacting, going, well, he should be sold, and stuff like that. That's what I'm on about when I say scapegoats. It's the consistent nature of criticism that is sometimes unwarranted and overreacted to the point where, well, they should be sold, they shouldn't be playing, they should be in the reserves, we need to get them out, dead wood, cast adrift, whatever. That's the issue I have, and there has been a few examples of that this season. Like you say, Dan Byrne, yes, he's had a couple of poor performances, but there were some performances when people were getting on his back, and he wasn't even that bad. In fact, he'd done okay. I get people don't particularly like Byrne at left back. I'm the same. I think left back is a position where we do need to look to strengthen. Lewis Hall's obviously now been made permanent, but he's still very, very young. Maybe we need someone for the present and to really make that place competitive. Dan Burn's obviously been brilliant since going back to centre back. You say Sean Longstaff, the guy has been playing with an injury for half the season because we have nobody else. You know, like, incredible to even get him on the out on the pitch for so long. And, you know, I've always defended Sean Longstaff because there's always been a player in there. Before then, he got properly got bruised, as it were, along with a few others.
And to what think, a fantastic scene that is. Get that on a T-shirt.
Yeah. Well, it's never Bruce's fault, was it? So it was Longstaff's fault. This is a guy who's like, and it got him down, like mental health struggles, and he's come back so stronger, and that guy should be applauded. So, which is why I always defend Sean Longstaff. However, yes, a couple of performances have been poor, and it's okay to call him out on that. That's what football fans and football media do. That's what it's talking points. That's what you do with your mates down the pub. That's what you do on social media. But it's the constant getting him down, and like Trippier was happening to him earlier this season. Yeah, he had a couple of ropey performances, but my God, 98% of his performances for Newcastle have been absolutely world class. So it just really, really irritates me. And you just think, well, if the players get wind of this, then they think, well, I may as well go, but it's just, yeah, thankfully they don't really, do they? But it just, there's an overreaction that just needs to be simmer down a little bit.
One man you didn't mention there, Miguel Almirón's probably the ultimate scapegoat. The poor lad, if he goes onto social media after most games, he'd probably never want to pull on a black and white shirt again.
Yeah.
Oh, here we go. Here we go. This is going to unravel your point, isn't it? Are you about to say to a right to make Miguel Almirón a scapegoat?
No, but I think the time is right to probably sell him. His performances last season were somewhere out of this world. You think back to Spurs away, Fulham away last season. This season, he's not really hit those levels, has he? Paris, I thought he was brilliant. In the Champions League against both games against PSG, which, by the way, you look at that semi-final now and you just think... I said last week, didn't I, that the Champions League exit bothers me more than the cup final loss against Man United. The past week in the Champions League has not helped. It really hasn't helped. Absolutely gutting. But yeah, I suppose it puts pay to that argument just to sidetrack off a little bit. But, you know, the people that were sneering when it was called Group of Death, you know, both teams going through are in the semi-finals, one team guaranteed to get in the final. Milan are cooking in the Europa League, and, you know, so, yeah, that showed them a little bit. But, yeah, I do kind of lustily watch on, thinking that should be us. We should have been in Barcelona the other night, but hey ho. Back to my point. Almirón, yeah, there has been times where he's not been as bad as people make out. There has been times this season where he has been bad, and I do think now in particular he is better off the bench to make an impact, bringing that fantastic energy of his off the bench to tie defenders' legs, I think has worked a treat a couple of times. But yeah, again, it happens with a lot of players. I mean, it was even happening with Bruno at one point. My God, he's like the best midfielder we've ever seen in black and white. So it's just important to have that distinction, though, that it is okay to criticise a player's performance when it's warranted, but not when it's not warranted, and just be so continuous about it. It's just that's why it needs to get in the bin. It's just blech.
Is there a fine balance though between the two, do you think? And is it a difficult balance to get?
It shouldn't be. Say if a player, like, let's use Longstaff as an example, over the past couple of weeks, if he has a couple of bad games in a row, which he may have done, he probably has done, let's face it. There's an argument, well, you could say under normal circumstances, maybe he needs to be taken out of the team a bit, protected from himself, essentially. Just, you know, taken out of the firing line, and just give him a bit of a rest, bring him on with 20 minutes to go, hopefully when the game's won, and go about rebuilding a guy's confidence that way. But with Longstaff, at the moment, we have no one else in the midfield. There is nobody else. No one. Miley's injured. Willick's injured. Tonali, we know full well about. Joe Linton's still injured. What's the other option? Recall Jeff Hendrick. Yeah, that's going to go down well, isn't it? Jeez. You know, the guy's been playing with an injury for many months. He's probably going to require some serious treatment on it in the off season. Yes, you can kind of say, well, that performance wasn't really good enough today. But let's not make it the whole excuse as to why the team's lost and make him fit, like, be a detriment to the whole squad, if anything. There's that distinction that needs to be made. 9 times out of 10, one player's poor performance, unless, you know, you're a goalkeeper, isn't the only contributing reason as to why your team's not won. There'll be other factors in there. It's very, very rare that you've lost solely down to one player.
And I accept that, and I'm not talking about Sean Longstaff when I give this example out, but if their performances are consistently below par, which sometimes that does happen, you're talking, you know, 2, 3, 4 games in a row where mistakes are being made, or they're not as good as their counterparts next to them, then that criticism that you're talking about being okay might be viewed by some as choosing a scapegoat. But then others would argue, well, actually, if the performances are consistently bad, consistently poor, then it's not scapegoating someone. It's just unfortunate for them that the run of bad performances have all come at once.
Yeah, but then you would question certain factors. Like, obviously, this isn't using Longstaff as an example, is that? Because Howe has no choice. But if this was any other club, whoever, doesn't matter, but then you would question the manager. Well, why is he continuously choosing him and not taking him out of the firing line? Because, okay, stadium atmospheres and social media atmospheres around the first team are very, 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 very different, thank God. But occasionally, like, fans in the ground aren't stupid. They, you know, when they see something they don't like, they will make their voices heard, and rightly so. And so why aren't you questioning the manager at that point? Which brings me on to last week, actually, because I felt you absolutely diddled me last week, because you got us to rant on Manchester United, and I didn't really put forth any arguments. My main argument would have been, because, and I'm, don't get me wrong, I thoroughly enjoyed slagging off Man United for half an hour. it was great. But, like, the whole 5-sub, 3-sub thing, it's like, it's supposed to be like not just a test of your squad, but a test of your manager as well. You know, your manager picks the team, picks the system. You know, he shouldn't be allowed to change half the team just because he's effed up. You know, so that in a way is a test of your manager as well. Or why are you persistently trying to get your player to play out of his bad form when he just maybe needs an arm around the shoulder and you know, a game off sort of thing? That's the question I would ask. I wouldn't jump on the back of any one particular player when it's not really his fault. Players form. Players will go in and out of form. That's how the game works, unfortunately. Unless you are Messi and Ronaldo and have been in hot form for 10 years, you're going to have... I mean, look at Haaland now. I mean, look at when we're recording this, the day after Man City and Arsenal have gone out of the Champions League. I've woken up this morning and seeing Arsenal fans starting to turn on Saka. And people asking questions of Haaland. All right, he's out of form. He's still a monster of a striker. let's not make him the reason why Manchester City went out of the Champions League, why Arsenal went out of the Champions League. It's not all down to them. Arsenal got beat by the better team over two legs. And Manchester City went out to, you know, the greatest team of all time, essentially. It's not Haaland's fault. It's not Saka's fault. Okay, they're out of form. Big deal. Next season or whenever it takes, they're still going to be absolutely electric again. They're going to get back into form. To start a pile on or whatever, and to say stupid things about Haaland, saying he's a League Two level striker, like with his general play or whatever, is absolutely, I don't know, brain dead.
It is. I guess some would argue, though, this is all about interpretation. You know, it is everyone's right to an opinion, everyone's right to question and criticize, and it's maybe a little bit open to interpretation.
Haven't got a problem with that. But
what you're saying there, you know, people are questioning Haaland, and you're saying, the way I've interpreted what you said is that you're alluding to that he's become a scapegoat for what happened last night. But some would argue, well, actually, we're not scapegoating. We're just questioning his role in City's exit. You know, where was he when it mattered? You know, where has he been over the last few weeks? And I think I would side on that's a fair question. I don't necessarily think in a scapegoating a man who's out of form that they're asking the right questions.
Yeah, but we like look at back over time. Let's look at Shearer. How many times was he questioned just because he went? Wouldn't go 10 games without a goal, and like famously, he went how many years without a goal for England pre Euro 96?
I think it was two. But again, the point there is surely that run of form does warrant questions and criticism. I mean, I mean, obviously, I was too young to remember the squad being picked for Euro 96, and obviously it worked out perfectly in the end. But
I thought we were the same age, and I can remember that.
How old are you?
34.
Yeah, you've got a few years on us yet, mate. Not that that you might be able to tell by looking at we're both. But my point being, if a manager picked an out-of-form striker, and I know he was doing it domestically, but for England he wasn't, then of course people are going to criticise. If Gareth Southgate picks someone, you know, Marcus Rashford will probably be picked for the Euros and start. Marcus Rashford has been awful for the last two seasons, really. He's had some up moments, but for the majority of it, he's been awful. There will rightly be questions over how Marcus Rashford gets in a starting 11 ahead of Gordon, probably ahead of Cole Palmer, probably ahead of Jared Bowen, when he's been worse than each one of those players. And that is quite rightly a question that needs to be asked. You're not scapegoating Marcus Rashford. You are questioning the managers you've wanted, and you also question that man's form and whether he deserves his place. I can't subscribe to the fact that that's scapegoating someone. I think those are the right questions that need to be asked.
Yeah, but that's not scapegoating. That's the distinction I made at the top of my argument. You can ask questions about performances. The scapegoating nature is when it's kind of unwarranted and
But you just used the example of Haaland. He's been out of form recently, and you used that as an example of scapegoating. But that is exactly the same thing as the Rashford thing, is it not?
No, because didn't Haaland score like last week, and he's still being criticised?
Yeah, but is the criticism not warranted if he hasn't turned up against Madrid?
I don't think the criticism of him is warranted. No.
I think there's
he's
a
still
real
the fine, best out and out number nine in the world.
And I don't doubt that for a moment. I think there's a real fine margin, isn't there? Like I said, it's a fine balance to get between being critical and scapegoating. I think it becomes scapegoating maybe when, as you say, it is unwarranted or becomes personal. But
I hate that.
I do think it's a real fine balance to strike between being critical and becoming a scapegoat. But it is just, you know, it's the world of football, isn't it? Someone, bless, is always going to be targeted by fans, and it is just the way of the world. But yeah, I can't. It's hard for me to support this one. I think
really,
just simply because
I let
so
you
many
win the past 2 weeks to get your confidence up, and now you think you're captain. Hero of the Year again because just because you saved a cat from a tree.
You're really not selling yourself for a ticket here, Samuel.
Samuel, wow. Since when were you my mother? Or yeah, even well, though my mum doesn't
if you step the line, nah, you get your Christian name. I just think there's so many elements at play when it comes to this whole the idea of scapegoating, and it's so open to interpretation that it's
and I've tried difficult. To make clear distinctions that it's the continuous unwarranted criticism of one player. Which...
But then again, that is open to interpretation because, you know, if Newcastle United win 4-0 and someone still criticizes Longstaff, then fine. But again, there's so many elements in play to, you know, to the result, the performance. It's very difficult, I think, to nail down what is scapegoat and what is criticism. I don't know. I mean, people in the comments will let us know how they're feeling, but look, if it gets personal and if it isn't warranted, then that needs to get in the bin. But I just think...
Do you think the criticism of Dan Burn, the constant criticism, and this was over a period of months, it was 2 or 3 months where Dan Burn was getting slaughtered. Do you think that was warranted?
Some of it wasn't, but I think the majority of his performances were absolutely shocking. And the opposition were consistently targeting that left-hand side and they were having success the majority of the time. And it happened week in, week out. And as you said earlier in the show, Eddie Howe has to take responsibility for consistently playing him at left-back. And you say, yes, Dan Burn, massive heart, always puts in great effort. But I don't think the fact that Eddie Howe is consistently playing him in that position and dissolves him from that criticism. And no, I do think during that period of time, what we're talking about, November to January, February time, when he was having a shocker most weeks, I think football fans are more than entitled to question Dan Burn's performances and criticism. Fair play to the big man. The past month, 6 weeks, he's been absolutely brilliant. He looks like a totally different player. I know he went back to left-back to Spurs, but he was brilliant against. He's looked brilliant in centre-back. And look, as long as the abuse was never personal, as long as it was fair, which I do think it was, because, like I say, it was pretty much a consistent run of games where he was being targeted. And I don't think putting that wholly on Eddie Howe is fair. I think
he had options around that time as well. He could have put Hall in. He could have moved Trippier. I mean, let's not forget, Trippier is England's number one left back.
Yeah. No, I get that, but I don't think he was scapegoated. I think the criticism was fair because he wasn't very good. What are fans meant to do? Well, forget about it, Dan.
Yeah, you're right. Some of it was. You can, like I said, I have no issue with people criticising like individual performances. And again, sort of some weeks he did have a shocker because, and this isn't a new thing, sides targeted our left last season. And Dan Burn coped admirably. I remember the 0-0 draw at the Emirates where they were peppering our left-hand side and he dealt with Saka pretty much perfectly. They're always going to have a bit of joy there, but you know it's not a new thing anymore for a team to play a centre back out wide. Ben White's a centre back, really, isn't he? Vardiol is a centre back. Ake is a centre back. All the top teams are doing it.
Howe had options,
and you know he chose to persevere with a player that was out of form. He's back in form now. Players
were there. Are you making the manager the scapegoat here then?
No. I'm just saying you got to question it. Like you have to question anything. Why is this happening?
That exact argument there, the last 2-3 minutes, is exactly why I can't get on board with it because I think it's too hard to nail down. So I'm sticking with mine because I do think additional time in its current format, the lack of transparency, the lack of consistency is a bigger issue. It's an easier issue to fix as well. And I just think your point is so open to interpretation that it's just going to cause even
you want
more
to get out the public again. who have backed me twice.
I am more than happy to get to the point. Let's have some closing speeches then to try and persuade the public that we have the item that needs to get in the bin. So my item this week
Go on then, Hero of the Year.
Sam, you need to get in the bin. Is additional time... Is additional time in its current format. I've got no issue with the prolonged injury time. I do think teams that, as Sam would say, manage the game deserve to be punished if they are time-wasting, which, let's be honest, it is time-wasting. They need to be prepared to pay the penalty of additional time. However, I think there needs to be consistency in it. I think if teams are looking 1 week and getting 9-10 minutes because they took their time on a few goal kicks, and the next week another team isn't getting that, then quite rightly they're going to be a wee bit miffed. I think there needs to be transparency. I want to see a list, a statement at the end of each game where the fourth official puts out to the public exactly where these minutes have come from. We might not like it, but at least we'll understand it and accept it. And then it's down to the team on the pitch to make sure they don't concede a goal in those additional minutes. Let's make it more transparent. Let's be more consistent in it as well. And I think that'll change the game for the better. So additional time in its current format with the lack of transparency, that, ladies and gentlemen, should get in the bin. And that's why you should vote for my item this week. Sam?
Hello. Thank you, John McLean. So my argument is scapegoats. No issue whatsoever with criticising a player's individual performance of a game. It's a talking point. It's what we do. It's part of being a football fan. Absolutely do it. But when that criticism, which again is mainly online, of course it is, where it's consistent and most of which is unwarranted, and you're making a scapegoat one man from a whole men's football team. It's unwarranted. It should be got in the bin. We can do without it, and we'll make things a much happier place. You know, unlike, you know, added time, but he's fine with added time, just as long as he can read a report afterwards.
All right, Sergeant Al Powell. You definitely fit the Sergeant Al Powell kind of character.
Who's that?
See, this is, I wanted to test your diehard trivia.
Is that the guy that the policeman,
police sergeant? And before it all started kicking off, or as it was kicking off, he was in the convenience store buying up all the Twinkies from the shelf, and he said it was for his wife, and the shop assistant didn't believe him. I'll be honest, Sam, I can imagine you heading into the store and buying up all the Twinkies. I don't know if you can get Twinkies over here. So what is your what would be your choice?
I don't know. It was just a nice bit of cake, innit?
Nice bit of cake. There we go.
I don't know. But yeah, no, it's one of them, innit? But yeah. Is Die Hard a Christmas film?
Oh my God, just want to ask that question. Yes, of course it is. The best Christmas film out there. And anyone that says it isn't, you guys can get in the bin.
Yeah. Well, at least we agree on something.
We do. There's no vote needed on that one. There is a vote, though, needed on this week's episode. So we'll run this vote on Twitter. We'll also keep an eye on the comments on YouTube and collate your responses as well. My item, out of time in its current format, needs more consistency and transparency. Sam's item, scapegoats. Don't roll your eyes at me, sunshine. He's been Sergeant Al Powell. I've been John.
I have it. No, if I'm going to be a character, I want to be Josh from the West Wing. Because I can convince, I can argue, I can debate, and I could turn someone president one day.
Never seen it. I'll stick with being John McClane. What a movie, what a character. But yes, this has been, look at the look of disgust on your face now. This has been episode 10 of Get in the Bin with me, Andrew Musgrove, and Sam Mulner. Thank you very much for tuning in. Let us know in the comments your thoughts on this week's episode. Hit subscribe, give the video a thumbs up. And if you listen on the podcast channel, please leave us a rating and review. And for myself and Sam, we'll see you next week.